Thank you, Jim. We've talked a lot about growing stuff. Now we're going to spend about 15 minutes talking about killing something for a little bit. This is some work that our previous graduate student did, and like any good advisor, we move his name to the last and move the advisor's names forward. So, but I'm going to talk about optimizing smut grass control in Bahia grass pastures. I'm going to briefly introduce the two species that we have in the state, talk about the previous research that's been done, the research I'm presenting today, and then where we're going in the future. Well, smut grass has been around for a while. It is probably our number one weed species we have in Florida. Alternates back and forth between it and tropical soda apple, but usually smut grass is the number one complaint. It's believed to have originated from the Southeast Asia region. Now, typically, we'll have some fairly good pastures that are pretty clean. You'll see some clumps of smut grass growing out in here, and then there's a fairly good-sized bunch right in there. This is a pretty slow process. It looks not too bad for a while. 2-3 years later, it can look as bad as this. And you end up with a bunch of bare spots in between smut grass clumps, basically no desirable forage in their area. Well, I did allude to this, that we do have a couple different species in the states, small smut grass and giant smut grass. Mainly, there's some differences. Well, they say there's some differences in the clump width and the clump height. 2 to 3 feet for small smut grass versus 4 to 5 feet in height for giant. And also the clump width being 6 to 10 inches for small and 12 to 18 inches for giant. You go out into the field, though, it's really hard to find those differences. We tend to know a little bit more about the small smut grass because it's been around longer. We don't know as much about giant smut grass because it's a fairly recent introduction to the state. The easiest way to tell the two species apart, and the only way really for me, is to look at the seed heads. And the small smut grass is on your left, more of an oppressed cylindrical spike, and the giant smut grass is more of an open panicle. So that's the main way to tell the two species apart. If you remember on the previous slide, it showed most of the small smut grasses throughout the southeast United States and giant smut grasses limited to Florida. I drove through Georgia this year and there is some giant smut grass in South Georgia in the road median. So it is moving northward, but a little bit slow. Okay, so this brings us to where we've been, where we are. 1950s was really when small smut grass was first noticed as a problem in Florida pastures. They worked on it for about 40 years, and in the 70s, 75% of the improved pastures were infested. 1990s is when giant smut grass came into the state. So we spent about 60 years total combating the species, and I feel like sometimes we've really gotten nowhere. But different herbicides have come along, and so on and so forth. So why is smut grass such a problem? It's mainly because cattle don't tend to eat it that often. And here, there's a picture of some plants that have been grazed down, but this is in the late winter when Bahia grass is just starting to come out of dormancy. So it is eaten, but it's not readily chosen by the cattle. Forage nutrition-wise, smut grass is typically regarded as a low-quality forage compared to Bahia grass. But there is some data out there that shows that it's really not that different from Bahia grass. It's just not a preference to the cattle. Now, this was data on small smut grass. When one of our colleagues that was down in further south than I am in Florida did some work in the 90s on burning followed by rotational grazing of giant smut grass, he found basically no differences in crude protein and digestibility compared to Bahia grass. So I think there is some forage value to it. It's just a matter of forcing the cattle to graze it. Okay, so where have we been as far as our control efforts? And in the 50s is when it was first noticed as a problem, is when the mowing experiments were performed. And basically, they found it's just a temporary solution. It reduces the clump width. It obviously reduces the height temporarily. But doesn't really decrease the number of plants that are there. And then they think it also enhanced seed spread, which isn't really good if you're trying to get rid of something. grazing studies. We've had some mixed results. In the 70s, I did a lot of grazing studies with small smut grass. Basically, all of them ended up with didn't have very good cattle condition by the end of the study, so they didn't think it was a very viable option. With giant smut grass, where they looked at burning followed by rotational grazing, the cattlemen just didn't feel like they could manage it. They thought it was too labor intensive. So again, it worked to an extent, but again, too labor intensive. So then we're left with chemical, which we do get some very good control, and I'm going to go through that herbicide next. But there tends to be a lot of variation from one pasture to the next, from one year to the next, as far as how good the chemical works. And that chemical is hexazinone under the trade name of Velpar. It's a fairly expensive herbicide compared to most of the herbicides that we use in pastures. The main thing I want you to take home from this slide is that it is primarily absorbed by the roots, and there's little foliar absorption in smut grass. So we need rainfall to get this herbicide to work. So if we went back through the literature and looked at all the small smut grass work that was done in the late 70s and early 80s with hexazinone, the recommendations that came out of that research was that if you're going to spray in the spring in Florida, you need to use at least 0.8 kilograms to the hectare. But if you're in the rainy season, the summer and fall, you could go down to about a half a kilogram. Giant smut grass, when the literature was published on it, they're recommending at least 0.8 kilograms per hectare, but that was only recommended in the summer and fall during the rainy season. And then we started seeing some information that the 1.12 kilograms per hectare was actually more consistent. Oops. So that led us to question whether is there a need for different rate structures for both species, and is there any way to help hexazinone? Can an adjuvant help the hexazinone efficacy? So the first experiment, we did a rate titration study that was conducted from 2006 through 2008. The small smut grass studies were near Gainesville in Alachua County, and then we had several around the research center in Ona, Florida. And we used hexazinone rates from 0 to 1.6 kilograms per hectare, noting that the maximum application rate is actually 1.4 according to the label. The standard randomized complete block. We visually evaluated the plots at 1, 3, and 12 months after treatment. I'm just going to show you the 12 months after treatment data. And we used a regression to determine the effective concentration to obtain 90% control of smut grass. This is a graph that's going to be similar in the next two slides. I have control on the y-axis, hexazinone rate on the x, and our EC values will be up on the right-hand side. A couple things to take home from this slide, and you'll see the same trend in the next two slides as well. Basically, when we're below 0.84 kilograms per hectare, we have a lot of variability in our control, ranging from 20 upwards to nearly 80% of smut grass, a lot of variation. Once we get up above 0.84, we start to tighten up a little bit. Our EC90 for small smut grass was 1.13 kilograms per hectare, and we were able to combine this data over two seasons. So we're fairly confident about the small smut grass. Giant smut grass, we weren't able to combine over seasons and locations, but again, you see the same trend, a lot of variation. When you're below the 0.84 kilograms per hectare rate, you get above 0.84, you're upwards of 90%. And in this location, our EC90 was 1.11 kilograms per hectare. One of our locations in 2007, we actually had two locations in 2007, but I'm only going to show one. Again, a lot of variation here, below 0.84 kilograms per hectare, but fairly tight data behind that, beyond that, and our EC90 was 0.95. So to summarize our rate titration studies, basically our EC90s ranged from 0.73 to 1.1 for giant, and our EC90 for small is 1.13. So we're recommending to our growers that we need to use at least 1.12 kilograms per hectare for optimum smut grass control, regardless of the species. Our next study looked at different, basically, surfactants, and we looked at different rate of Optima as well as different surfactants. Optima, for those of you that aren't familiar with it, is basically the same surfactant that is used in Roundup. We conducted these trials in Clewiston, Florida, which is down fairly south and mainly sugarcane country, in 2005, and then repeated those in around Florida in 2006 and 2007. We actually used two rates of hexazinone of 0.84 kilograms and 1.12 kilograms, and we had several optimum rates from 0.125 to 1%. And then our other study contained pinomethylated seed oil, optima to 0.5%, kinetic at 0.1%, dynamic at 0.5%, and induce at 0.25%. So this is the Optima data, and we were able to combine this over the three locations that we had, and it was actually combined over the two hexazinone rates as well, because there really wasn't any difference. Our no surfactant here, just hexazinone alone, performed similarly to all the Optima rates that we looked at in the study. So basically no added benefit to using Optima. Similarly, we looked at the different types of surfactants without surfactant here on the top versus all the other surfactants that we looked at. Again, we're up around 90%, really no added benefit to using the different types of surfactants. So basically, we've concluded that why spend more money on an already expensive herbicide? You might as well just go up to the full rate and get the full benefit out of the herbicide. So our future directions is to compare the biology of both small and giant smutgrass. We're trying to figure out why giant smutgrass is taking over the small smutgrass niche. And then we're also looking at long-term management of smutgrass species, because we know we can control it with hexazinone, but 3 to 5 years down the road after we make our first application of hexazinone, we're usually back to the same density of smutgrass that we had previously. So we're looking at some long-term management strategies to figure out if there's any other techniques we can use to keep it out of the pasture. And that concludes my presentation. I probably have plenty of time for questions.
any questions?
Yeah, 20.
What's the cost of
the hexazinone treatment? The cost would range between 30 and 35 to acre per the acre, so it is quite expensive. Dennis?
Being in the Trisin family, are there concerns about widespread use of that?
There's concerns about it being in the groundwater. I don't think it's labeled for sugarcane in Florida for that reason. The main advantage that they have on that is a lot of cattlemen aren't going to spray it because it's so expensive. So they just kind of live with it until it gets so bad.
Yes. What about very early season grazing and just really hammering the smut grass before the hay grass comes?
Yeah, so his question was, what about very early season grazing and really hammering the smut grass before the season comes on? And that works initially. But once our rainy season starts, everything starts growing at the same time, and the cattle just can't keep up with it. So, Joanna?
One last question.
Frank, what about the developed resistance on the herbicide? Is that any concern? Or
resistance?
Yeah.
There's concern, but again, they don't apply it on the same pasture year in, year out, so it's not like we have with Roundup already, so I'm not overly concerned about it. It's always going to be in the back of my mind.
Thank you, brother.
Right, thank you.